right now. Text 960-960 to sound off. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Make Canada's best-selling line of trucks even better by visiting Universal Ford Lincoln to get $1,000 toward Ford custom accessories at the Built Ford Tough event. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat's already poked the puck loose in the last minute of the third period. PK Subban and shoots.
Been getting frustrated lately, and the only thing keeping me sane is the team winning and other people stepping up and scoring. And you know, when you just kind of let it go and you realize you can end the series with one shot, I think that frustration goes away for a brief moment, and that's what happened.
The Montreal Canadiens are moving on. First team through to the second round. Sweepy, sweepy, sweepy. Tampa done. Good morning. It is Pinder and Humphreys in for Boomer this morning. After we played Golden Girls music and he sounded like B. Arthur yesterday, we decided sleep on the menu. Rhett Warner will join us at 7 o'clock. Hall of Fame wide receiver, one of the greats at the position, Chris Carter. Yeah, thank you, yes. Thanks for being a friend, Jay. Playing the music, showing up for work every day. Chris Carter will join us at 7. On top of that, we've got Warner in at that same time as well. We'll hear from Troy Ward in about 35 minutes' time, the head coach of the Abbotsford Heat, as they get set for their first-round playoff matchup, and maybe a check-in on Emile Poirier, who had quite a pro debut last weekend. How much are they going to use him moving forward in the postseason? How does he look moving forward for the Flames? But my goodness, what a night in the NHL. Mr. Humphreys,
hello.
Montreal, four games. Did anyone see this happening?
No, not from the outside looking in how close these two teams were in the standings. I think the Montreal Canadiens definitely got a few bounces along the way. They admitted that after the game, but that's what you have to have happen for in the playoffs. You need some bounces to go your way. You need to create your chances, and Montreal did. And the veteran guys that Tampa Bay needed to rely on in this series just weren't existent. I mean, Eric Burr is a guy with some good playoff experience. He needed to step up. Didn't really happen. Of course, Steven Stamkos, probably the only weapon that Montreal really had to concern themselves with. I mean, they do have some other players, but that's the big one, and they did a good job containing him after his two goals in game one.
That's a good point. Goaltending. You knew it wasn't going to be close with Ben Bishop out. We were hopeful we would see Bishop at some point in this series just for the sake of competitive balance. He did not make an appearance. In fact, Gudlevskis, the Latvian guy that stoned the Canadians over in Sochi, and a nail-biter, probably the closest game the Canadians played in that tournament in many regards. He actually spent some time in the net last night. Tampa would tie it up late, but Max Pacioretty gets the large primate off his backside, scoring the goal with just 43 seconds remaining. We heard the clip from him coming in. Frustration, but yes, they are moving on, and now they await the winner of Boston, Detroit. Mm-hmm. So, am I crazy in thinking it's just how many games are the Bruins going to win this thing in? They look pretty good, all right, too. Last night.
Yeah, they look pretty good. Tuukka Rask rounding into form. The Bruins got a lot of weapons, and to me, the Detroit Red Wings are just too banged up. They're missing Henrik Zetterberg, Daniel Alfredsson not in the lineup. Who knows if he's going to be back in this series or not? Todd Bertuzzi not playing. There's a lot of guys sitting out, a lot of their veteran guys as well. So, I mean, it's a young team that rallied down the stretch in Detroit with young guys like Gustav Nyquist and company. But, you know, the playoffs are a whole different animal, and they got through game one. In my opinion, they probably didn't deserve to win that game. I mean, it's a 1-0 game. Datsyuk makes a great play, but
did he ever.
If that's all you're going to have to offer in this series, you're not going to last long against the Bruins.
So we have Montreal moving on. Boston takes a 2-1 lead in game three last night. The Rangers get a big win in Philly. And you want to talk about goaltending in that Tampa-Montreal series. Mm-hmm. You can't help but think that Ray Emery would love to replay two of these three games he's had. He was the first star in game two, the one that Philly won. But the opener in this series and last night's first in Pennsylvania, not so sharp. Although, that said, this game was right there hanging in the balance. They were there 2-1 at one point in this hockey game. They didn't get the offense either. We'll check in with our East-West hot stove at about 8:20 this morning, where we will hear from Al Morganti, who was taking in that game, I'm sure, from the Philly area. We'll also have Eric Dehatchik, who has spent the bulk of the season down in California. He'll have the expertise on the Sharks and the Kings, where last night, my goodness, everyone looked at this and said, ooh, long series, physical series, yeah. Ooh, long series. And there was some split, whether it was L.A. or San Jose, but the one thing we all agreed on, this wasn't going to be easy. And somehow, some way, San Jose's making it look easy.
Yeah, they are.
3-0 now in that series with an OT winner from Patrick Marleau. I saw this game was 3-2 in bed. Couldn't get to sleep. Checked the phone. Oh, we're off to overtime. Yeah, okay, I'll go sit in front of the TV and watch that thing. And thankfully, Patrick Marleau ended it 6-20 in. Now you'd have to think, is LA going to be one of those, what, three teams in NHL history that will come back from 3-0? Odds would suggest no way.
Not against
that San Jose. Especially the way San Jose's rolling right now.
Yeah, everybody's fighting for San Jose. That's the thing that impresses me the most. You've got lines 1-4 chipping in, whether it's Rafi Torres or Mike Brown. Thomas Hertl starting to chip in with the tying goal yesterday. Marlowe's going. Thornton's going. Burns is going. Pavelski's putting up points. So San Jose Sharks are a pretty tough team to play right now. And they're going to be a very tough team to stop at some point in this playoffs by anybody if they can continue to play this way.
Pretty good first round so far. How's your bracket looking?
I don't do the brackets.
What do you mean? You don't do predictions of the playoffs?
No. Well, I mean, the only thing I predicted was the San Jose-Boston final.
You're looking all right there.
I should
You're
be
looking
all right.
I actually had that as well. It's a funny thing you mentioned that.
Yeah.
I've loaded up on Philadelphia Flyers. I'm sweating, Josh. I'm sweating.
Yeah, that's Steve Mason going back in the net, though. That might make a bit of a difference.
Let's hope so. Mason did back up last night. We'll get to some other injury notes. A couple teams that look dominant, maybe just as recent as 3 days ago, maybe in trouble. We'll tell you why. And on top of that, there is some WHL news, as both those final series played game number 3 last night. We'll tell you who leads each of those two respective series in the East and Western Conference. Blue Jays get a big win. Brett Laurie's got a horrible, horrible, horrible mustache, and much, much more. It is Pinder and Humphreys in, filling in for Boomer in the Morning. Warner arriving shortly on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Make Canada's best-selling line of trucks even better by visiting Universal Ford Lincoln to get $1,000 toward Ford custom accessories at the Built Ford Tough event. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
.615, good morning. Pinder and Humphreys in for Boomer, who is not so good today. Came in yesterday, looked over. Uh-oh. He has luggage under his eyeballs and sounded like... Was B. Arthur, that was the one he sounded like? So we had a little Golden Girls music and said, you know what, Boom? Thanks for being a friend, but why don't you have a little snooze tomorrow? That's today now. So we're not going to wake the bear. We're going to let him sleep, get him right tomorrow, and hopefully... he'll be fine before we head out to Fairmont on Friday, which I'm totally fired up about. The last thing we want is Boomer infecting the staff in the Columbia Valley. So we wish him well. But so, Josh, you come in. I slide into the big chair.
Yeah.
And what the heck's going on? It looks like you've been hit by a truck. You're even sicker than Boomer was.
Yeah, it's not good.
What? Talk to me here, Goose. Like, it looks like you have just woken up. You've been slapped in the face. You've got the red eyes. You're bundled up like it's minus 20.
Yeah, throat is the sorest it's ever been in my life.
This is unbelievable.
My body is sore. It feels like someone's inside my stomach.
Someone's inside of you.
Grabbing it and just twisting it.
Hmm. Not good, Josh. Not good at all. No. So we just make it till 6:40.
Yeah.
You need a little sleep. Go under the cubicle in the newsroom. Have a little snooze. Get the newsies sick. Stay the heck out of here. You know, Rhett absolutely drives them nuts when someone's got the littlest... little tickle in their throat. Never mind a walking zombie like yourself.
We'll That's why
get
from
you out of here.
7 to 9, I'll be invisible.
So, what's the plan here?
Sleep in the truck.
Sleep in the truck.
Wake up for the last hour. See what we're doing, dealing with.
It's the heart of a lion. You deserve some sort of.
I don't like
a Purple Heart. Some sort of a award, a medal of valor for your efforts today.
Something should be awarded because this is brutal.
How do you like waking up this early?
I don't mind. The hours whatsoever, to be honest with you.
All right.
I enjoy waking up, but...
not today. You'd rather be like dead this. Today, it sounds like. Okay, well, that's good. Canadians move on. The Boston Bruins take a pretty serious grip on their series with the Wings, who looked pretty nice in Game 1, but reality may be sinking in. The Bruins have taken over control of that series. The Rangers beat the Flyers. Still looks like a long series, especially if they can get Steve Mason in the net. He backed up Ray Emery last night. That was in Philly, so they lose in front of the home fans. How about their old boy in that one? The now Ranger, former Flyer, Dan Carcillo, the car bomb.
Did you see the goal?
Saw the goal pretty nice.
Yeah, celebration with the fans.
Got right
fans.
In the corner, slamming his stick on the glass, and, well...
Got the one-finger salute.
You got a couple one-finger salutes. In Philly, you know, they're not terribly fond of anyone playing for another team, whether you're a former member of the Flyers or not. And
that, what was crazy, he got that penalty right before for hooking, which obviously was an absolute brutal call, and then he bumps into the ref, nearly getting himself tossed from the game. I think if that ref knew... the ref knew he made a brutal call, so he kind of let it go for Carcillo, and then to the box, Carcillo was absolutely ripping the official.
That was a horrible call. He dives and tries to lift the stick on a player in the slot, doesn't get the body, lifts the stick nicely, gets called for a hook.
And he had every right to be mad, but I thought he was getting tossed for sure. He went right to the ref, made contact, continued to go into the box and scream at the official. Luckily, he doesn't get kicked out because he comes out of the box and he puts that one away, chasing Ray Emery from the net, and likely the last we'll see of Razor Ray in the playoffs.
Yeah, and not necessarily a phenomenal postseason. I was thinking, I believe Emery's up at the end of the year. He might have one more year on his deal, but he hasn't made himself any money here.
No.
I mean, last year he gets a ring in Chicago. He carried the mail for the bulk of the regular season. He gets injured. He's got some nagging hip issues, and some of the goaltender equipment adjustments has hurt what he's allowed to do in terms of padding for his hips and some leverage things he can do with in terms of putting things on the pads.
Yeah.
But that said, he gets a deal in Philly, not huge money. This was an opportunity to showcase himself.
He's brought in there to be the backup.
And but again, they also bring in Mason, a guy that had been a starter, but you know, Columbus was done with.
Yeah.
Much like Philly was done with Bobrovsky, I suppose.
For some reason.
Yeah. But point being that this guy now, do you want him? Like, if you're the Flames and you're looking for someone to come in and push Kari around, would you even look at Ray Emery now?
Not at this point in time. It seems kind of pointless to bring a guy like that in when you could have a Yoni Ortio or another more reliable backup that can learn, you know, that can teach Kari Ramos some things.
I'm not much of
Emery's a teacher kind of a guy that he would take a lot of time to work with Kari Ramos during the season. I think there's some better options.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It'll be interesting to follow that one. Tonight, what have we got for games? There's three of them tonight as things start to taper off a little bit. We'll be going four a night all week. Pittsburgh at Columbus. This is the second game in Ohio. They still have never won a home playoff game. They got swept in 09 by the Wings. It looked like they had Pittsburgh exactly where they wanted them. This has been the series of
twice they've blown that. I don't think they can recover from doing it twice.
We'll see. If they get a win here, it's best of three, but Pittsburgh has home ice. That might be a tall task. Goaltending has been horrible in this. No one has allowed less than three goals on either side for the entire series. Elsewhere, Anaheim and Dallas. Dallas looking to square that series off. A bit of a homer series thus far. All three wins from the home side. And Chicago will be without Brent Seabrook tonight as the Blues are in
the Windy
City.
How about San Jose, the first Western Conference team to win on the road?
Good point, because of course they Minnesota won as well.
They were 11-0, the Western Conference on home ice, going into games yesterday. The Eastern Conference was 4-6 going into the games yesterday, so San Jose becomes the first team to win on the road in the Western Conference. Pretty crazy.
Heading into yesterday, 15-4 were the records of the home team. Yesterday, though, just 1-3 were the home teams. As Boston gets a win on the road, Montreal wins at home, and the other two victories, San Jose on the road, same with the New York Rangers. We'll break when we come back, a closer look at those four games from last night. We'll also sneak in an update maybe on the Blue Jays, some WHL stuff, and the Raptors, arguably the biggest win in the last decade for that franchise. Not going to talk your ear off, but the atmosphere was pretty electric in Hogtown. That all ahead on Boomer in the Morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking hockey right now. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Make Canada's best-selling line of trucks even better by visiting Universal Ford Lincoln to get $1,000 toward Ford custom accessories at the Built Ford Tough event. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
.627, good morning on your Wednesday. Pinner and Humphreys filling in for an ill Boomer. We've replaced a sick married man with a sick young man. Humphreys looks like death.
Yep.
Trying to paint a picture here. It's the theater of the mind here as you tune in on your commute to work. Turn our attention to the action of last night in the NHL. Why don't we start with the early game? Montreal Canadiens at home trying to break out the brooms. Don't know how to say it in French, but that's what they were up to against the Tampa Bay Lightning. It would be Lindback and Price between the pipes. No Ben Bishop, despite skating with the team for the first time yesterday morning. My goodness, what a start. Game 3, 11 seconds in. It was Rennie Borken last night. 224 in. Danny Briere, his first of the postseason from Dale Weiss. Do we know how to... Am I saying that right? Dale Weiss?
Yep.
I can't recall. But the guy they picked up from Vancouver, it's been a nice find. He can skate very well for a theoretical bottom six. Guy known for scrapping more than anything. But Weiss, a big goal earlier in the series. The overtime winner in game one. Game one, right?
Yep.
And then the assist on the opener last night. And with all the pressure on Tampa at this juncture of the series last night, those early goals just absolutely crushed them. They brought back the big opera singer for the second night in a row. And it kind of was like rewind play. Game three all over again. Places going bananas. Montreal scores early. And the guys on the Tampa bench are looking at each other like, here we go again.
Yeah. Nothing you can do. Montreal are getting scoring from their depth guys, which was huge. Throughout the entire series, Gallagher, Bork took the pressure off of Vanek and Pacioretty, and they didn't have to score until the game winner from Pacioretty to win the series. So if the top guys get going as well, Montreal's not going to be a pushover in round two, regardless of who they play.
Well, it looks like they'll get Boston. Did we find out the pronunciation, Jay? No, we didn't. Okay, so it's a bit of a joke from the morning. Sure, you're probably sleeping when it goes on.
I know what you're talking about.
Montreal then made it 2-0 with Lars Eller. No word on any fruit baskets and bottles of wine sent his way. His second of the postseason from Gionta, and it was 2-0 Habs after 20 minutes. In the second, a shorthanded goal from Andre Palat, their outstanding rookie forward, gets Tampa within one, but then Brendan Gallagher less than a minute and a half later. And that's just the way it's felt in this series. As soon as Tampa feels like they have something good going, bang, there was a response from Montreal. Gallagher is a baller, his third of the postseason for the former Vancouver Giant, and a guy that looks like you might be able to stow above your seat on an airplane. He's that small. But
doesn't play like it, though.
He does not at all. Victor Hedman and Tyler Johnson would give Tampa life in the third with goals about 3 minutes apart early on. That with Christer's Gudlevskis back in the Tampa net, not Anders Lindback, who got yanked. A little bit of momentum swing there, and down to the wire we went. Into the final minute with it looked like overtime looming for the Habs as well as the Lightning here. It was Pacioretty with a huge goal, and, well, as you might expect, place went bananas.
Pacioretty poked the puck loose in the last minute of the third period. PK Subban, Vanek shoots,
first of the postseason. He said he's been fighting it. It's been driving him nuts. The only thing keeping him sane is that the team's been winning. But there it is. A goal that ends the Lightning season. And one that... I wonder how you feel about this season. I think in the long term, this was a big step forward for Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
But from where they were coming back from the Olympics to where they were now, what a series of blows. Martin St. Louis goes out. The return's lovely, but... Those two first-round picks they're going to get, or a first and a second, whatever it turns out to be, dependent upon if Callahan resigns in Tampa, they're going to win that deal long-term.
Yeah.
But right now, if you look at what Callahan's given them in the playoffs versus what St. Louis has done for the Rangers, it's a short-term blow. Steven Stamkos, at that point, was healthy. He loses the guy that he's had chemistry with for the bulk of his career. And on top of that, a guy that's going to get Vezina votes and their MVP for the season, Ben Bishop, goes down. So short-term, this is bitter. But long-term, this is an organization moving in the right direction. They still have Jonathan Drouin on the way. And John Cooper has done a phenomenal job in his young NHL coaching career.
Yeah, I mean, disappointing season in the short-term and not really a lot of things they can help. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you lose your starting goaltender before the postseason, the Marty San Luis situation, you lose your franchise player for the majority of the year, and still find a way to keep yourself in the race and keep yourself in a playoff team
home
all
ice.
Season. And again, home ice, despite all that happening. But maybe a Tampa Bay team that just run out of gas. I mean, how many things can go wrong before you just can't go on anymore? And that's, I think, what happened to Tampa Bay.
Montreal advances. They will await the winner of the next game we'll get to, which was Boston and the Detroit Red Wings, these all Atlantic Division teams. Montreal waiting in the Atlantic Division Finals. And Boston looks like they'll probably get there eventually. A 3-0 win last night in Motown as the series switched from Beantown to the Motor City. It was Dougie Hamilton with his first of the postseason. What a rocket. He put this thing just under the bar. Gorgeous shot 9 minutes into the first period. Then Jordan Caron late in the first period from Thornton and Kevin Miller, who filed in on the back end as they switched around some defensive parts on the blue line for the Bees. And then an empty netter from Patrice Bergeron late would seal it. And again, Tuukka Rask, number one star in both Bruins wins. And that's not going to be uncommon this year, just as it wasn't last year when they went right to the final and were ousted by the eventual champs.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great in this series as well. He only allows one goal in the first couple of games and pitches a shutout in that one. He's, I mean, the Boston Bruins don't need him unnecessarily. I mean, having him there is good, and maybe some nights they will, but that team is so deep for Boston that he only gets 23 shots. I mean, that's one of the easiest nights of Tuukka Rask's career.
That's a good point. Didn't have to do a ton of work. That said, hang in the zero. You'll take that anytime.
Yeah.
A Toronto Maple Leaf draft pick acquired how? One for one trade for.
Oh, that was the Phil Kessel deal.
Andrew Raycroft. Oh, we got Justin Pogge. We don't need two good young goaltenders. Pogge's going to be outstanding, so we'll just ship Rask
to
Boston.
And
we'll get Andrew Raycroft. Coming off his call to performance. That one didn't turn out so well. Raycroft's career long since gonzo at the NHL level. Boston takes a 2-1 lead in that series. Game number four for them from Detroit goes tomorrow night. Next series, we go to Philly, the first of any action in Philadelphia in the postseason. The first two were played on Broadway in New York. Rangers get a lead early, 3:54 in. Derek Stepan from Nash and St. Louis, and it was 1-0. Then Martin St. Louis, a lovely redirection in front. It looked like it hit a defender as well. No chance for Emery on that one. Certainly the first one he could have been better. It was off his glove and just laying at the top of the painted ice. 2-0 Rangers at that point. The Flyers would get things close late in the first, 2-1. Mark Streit jumping up into the rush, converting a setup from Voracek and Giroux. And, okay, we got a game, 2-1, but in fact, not really. Every time we looked up, it seemed Philadelphia was in the penalty box, especially in the early going. They took three penalties in the first period, another one midway through the second before the Rangers got undisciplined in their own way. But a 4-1 final, Girardi and Cristello round out the scoring for the Rangers. How do you see this one going? I think Steve Mason's return will change this series.
Yeah.
But that said, is he going to be better than Henrik Lundqvist? He looked pretty darn sharp last night.
Not better than Henrik Lundqvist, no, but he gives Philadelphia some stability that perhaps if Philadelphia can get a 2-goal lead in this series or get up by a goal, more comfortable that you can win that game with Steve Mason back there than you can with Ray Emery.
And for all the people that are saying Claude Giroux is a superstar, I'd like to see him do something. Not that he has been bad, but much like you would expect a superstar to put a team on his back, that's what Philadelphia is going to need out of him. It isn't as if it's a one-line team. They've got some scoring spread out over four lines. Vinny LeCavalier is on their fourth line. They've got Voracek. They have Reed. They've got Hartnell. They've got Wayne Simmonds. This is a very deep roster in terms of forwards. Claude Giroux, on home ice, you should be able to get him away from some matchups that you couldn't in New York. They're going to need him to show up at some point here.
Yeah, you are going to need Claude Giroux to get some. I mean, what he does away from the puck is one thing, but you got to start putting some numbers up at some point.
Yeah, and it's not to say he's been bad. It's just that you're going to need a superstar to be your best player if you want to move on. They trail in that series 2-1. Next action for them comes Friday. They got a couple days off before they get back at it in that series. San Jose into Los Angeles. Everyone knew this would be a much tougher test than Game 2, where San Jose scored 7 straight. Didn't take a rocket scientist to do that, or a brain surgeon. We knew that was going to be the case, and it certainly was. San Jose 1-0. Brent Burns, a bit of an unusual goal, seemed to flip one in that knuckled on Jonathan Quick. 1-0 early, but the Kings respond nicely. Stoll and Gabarek in the second period, just 3 minutes and 11 seconds apart, and it was a 2-1 lead for the Kings. The Sharks would equalize with Matt Nieto getting his first of the postseason, and we were all square at 2-2 going into the third. Then the Kings take the lead. Jeff Carter's first of the postseason. Kopitar and Doughty with the helpers. And then a big goal from Tomas Hertl whacking away in traffic in front of the net. The rookie from the Czech Republic would not be denied. Wingles and Vlasic get the assist. It's tied up, and then in overtime, Patty Marleau with an absolute backbreaker of a goal. Here's how it sounded at Staples Center in Los Angeles.
Scott Hannon feeds it along the goal line. Here's Marleau on the backhand, flipping it high, scores! A deflected shot, Marleau on the backhand, and it beats Jonathan Quick. The Sharks win the game in overtime and take a commanding 3-0 lead.
Commanding indeed. Not a lot of people would be surprised if you'd said the Sharks would eventually win this series, but the manner they've done it has been surprising. Probably the most shocking thing. You'd understand if LA didn't win because they weren't getting goals, yeah. But you'd be shocked if it was because they were allowing way too many, and that's been the case. And I don't know that it's necessarily on Jonathan Quick so much as that entire roster.
Their defense is old and slow, and they can't contain the big guns of Tampa or the San Jose Sharks right now. Robin Regier, not 100%. Willie Mitchell, not what he used to be in the NHL. These guys just cannot keep up with the Coutures, the Pavelskis. Even Marlowe and Thornton have hit a new level. Thomas Hertl again. They just can't seem to keep up, and I think this is a four-game sweep.
Well, they're going to win it at some point. It doesn't look like, it never does when any team's down 3-0. It's just the historical context. It just doesn't happen. It happens about once every half century that you come back from a 3-0 hole. That's where LA is at now. And all of a sudden, you remember back to these stretches where they had lost 6-7 in a row in the new year before the Olympics. They had trouble scoring goals. They were hot at some stretches in the season, but they were never in that same class as Anaheim and San Jose at any juncture of the season in terms of flirting with first in the Pacific. And that's what happens. You're a 3-seed. You get the team better than you that had been better than you most of the season. They're down 3-0. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk some Abbotsford Heat hockey. They've got playoff action this weekend. Emile Poirier, the Calgary Flames' second of three first-round picks last season, had a phenomenal debut. We'll check in with the head coach, Troy G. Ward, as he is already at his desk in Abbotsford at 5:39. Jeez, he works hard. We'll be back with that in a moment on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking hockey right now. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Make Canada's best-selling line of trucks even better by visiting Universal Ford Lincoln to get $1,000 toward Ford custom accessories at the Built Ford Tough event. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
6:43 on your Wednesday morning. Pinder in for Boomer, who is beneath the weather, as they say. We're going to get him back to 100. Before we head to Fairmont on Friday, where we are live from the resort at the Hot Springs. That will not suck. It's a lower body injury, Troy. We're not going to get too specific. Playoff time on the horizon, if you're curious about Boomer.
No, how's Boomer doing?
Well, it's somewhere between the chin and the ankle. We're not going to get too specific here.
All right.
A little under the weather. He'll be all right. He'll be back at it tomorrow, we're hoping. How are you guys doing? Playoffs begin Friday. You got games 1 and 2 at home. Before you head to the home of the defending champs, the Calder Cup champions of last year, Grand Rapids. Are you healthy? Are the guys fired up?
Yeah, the guys are healthy. We are probably the healthiest we've been probably in almost 3 months. So it's, this is the time of year when you want to be healthy and at your best. And guys are ready to go.
That's awfully exciting because I know in years past, especially at this level, you just never know when you're going to have bodies. And a lot of times you can be left with a lot of your roster missing post-trade deadline, depending on what the club north of you has done on the food chain. How does this group compare to the prior three you've seen in Abbotsford heading into the second season?
Well, I would say this one's probably our most healthiest it's been. I thought a couple of years ago, my first year when we went into the playoffs against Milwaukee in the first round, we were just a little nudged up in a few places, and we had a lot older team at that particular time that had to play with part of those injuries. It's just a long year, as you know, in Abbotsford with travel. And, you know, this year is probably our healthiest of the 3 years that, we've been here and probably our youngest. So it's probably also our hungriest.
That's fair to say. When I looked at this roster, the one thing I noticed, the major change from the 2 years that I had the pleasure of working with you there, the leadership core is entirely different. There's no Ben Walter. Quentin Lang is gone. You're not a team that is laden with quad A, AHL, longtime guys. Who has comprised this leadership core? And when something needs to be said, who's the guy in the room that stands up and addresses it?
Well, we've had two different leadership cores kind of emerge. We had, obviously, just Dean Arcini here the first part of the year. He was the only vet we had almost until January. Occasionally, Derek Smith had dropped down and Blair Jones by vet status, but really had never been here long enough to sink their teeth in any leadership. So it was pretty much by young committee. It was Dean Arcini and it was Ben Street a little bit, Chad Billens and Carter Banks, which was a good flavor because, you know, at this level, as you know, one of the critical components for leadership is somebody that is young enough that understands maybe, if you want to use the word, new millenniums, but not too old where they're kind of out of touch. Like, it's really funny, but a 32-year-old to a 35-year-old at this level is out of touch with a 20-year-old. Like, they're not in the same, really, the boat. And this year, I think Carter Banks was kind of the bridge that kind of kept things going here all year because he was the younger guy. Chad Billings was a leader, younger guy, only in his second year, played last year with Grand Rapids. And Ben Street obviously added some things. And Dean kind of carried the weight as far as organizing the group, kind of the grandfather of the group, and keeping them on board. And then as it's emerged, Ryan, like now you've got guys like Shane O'Brien, you've got Derek Smith here, Corey Locke came here by way of trade, and Trevor Gillies came in. So, you know, it's kind of like we got a little bit of everything here. We got some older, we got some younger, and really it's still been the core group, though, of Billings, Street, Banks, and Arsenia have been the main leaders of the team.
And you've also got about 10,062 black aces with you right now as all the Flames prospects that are done, either their collegiate or CHL seasons have joined you. What's that been like? It's almost like you've got two separate teams. You've got your A squad, and then when they're done, you got to get the Bs, get their work in, and get them acclimatized to the pro environment.
Yeah, we've got Kanzig here, Roy here. You know, we've got Coda Gordon here. Patrick Seeloff is back skating now. You know, Klimchuk is here. Ryan Culkin is here. You know, we've got a lot of young kids. Kulak is here. Poirier is here. So, you know, we've got a group today that'll skate at 8 o'clock. There'll be about 9 black aces, and then we'll have about 22 in the regular group today. So, roughly, we've got about 31 to 32 players here right now that are kind of going through the paces, and it's been good. It's good to have those kids around.
And I wonder how you approached last weekend, because you knew you were in the playoffs, the seeding was still up in the air, but you were going to be the low-numbered team in the matchup no matter where you finished there. Yep. And so you put some young kids in. When you see Emile Poirier put up the kind of numbers he did over the weekend, do you think about putting them in, or is it more about the vets that have been there all season rather than rolling the dice with a guy who might not be super comfy with the systems?
No, I think it's still really about development. You know, to be honest with you, Ryan, we just got to develop hockey players, and you know, that development is in within the food chain of the company, and Poirier and Kulak and the Klimchuks of the world, they're all obviously future guys that we want to get ready for, obviously, just training camp next year with Bob Hartley and his staff. And, you know, so we're going to give them as much exposure as we can, and to play any of those guys in any one of these games is something that our goal is. And if they're better or we feel that they can contribute more at this particular time, then obviously some of the guys have been here all year. Those are decisions we'll make come Friday. But I look to get those kids in just as I did last weekend. You know, Poirier got 2 or 3 games in. Klimchuk got 2 or 3 games in. Kulak got 2 or 3 games in. You know, we're getting these guys in as much as we can right now, and I think that's important for our franchise.
I think when all is said and done, we'll look back at the 2013 draft class and say, wow, what a fantastic group of players spread out around the NHL. We see Nathan MacKinnon with a dominant rookie season. It looks like he's a slam dunk for the Calder Trophy. Seth Jones is a guy that played some big minutes in Nashville at the 4th overall slot. Barkov played a huge role in Florida. Sean Monahan had a fantastic year here in Calgary. Nichushkin still going in the playoffs with Dallas. And we're all curious what Poirier and Klimchuk might be, because they're also from that 2013 first round. What have you seen from those two in particular?
Well, Emile Poirier, first of all, just came last week. He joined us in San Antonio, flew in separate from the team, but got there after his major junior year was completed. And, you know, he watched the first game, kind of, you know, did some teaching with the staff for about a day and a half and got himself ready. Got in 2 games, obviously got some points. You know, the one thing that that Poirier brings to the table is just he's got like almost Pavel Bure, like kind of a 1.5 step, and he's at full speed, like he's gone, and he's super, super fast. He allows himself a lot of time and space on the ice. He has great vision, obviously, has good hands, and he puts his nose in there, like he's not afraid to go to dirty areas and score goals. And here's a guy that you probably would project out at some point in time will be able to get, you know, for sure in the 20s, if not in the 30s, and goals in the NHL. Like he's that gifted, well, as a skater, and he's got great vision. So good days ahead for Emile. You know, I was real happy with his first weekend, and we look to kind of get him in there this weekend here against Grand Rapids. And Klimchuk's played a little bit more. His year was done in Regina a little quicker, and I think he's got maybe like 6 games in. He's gotten a point. And Klimmer showed a lot of promise, too. He's a good 200-foot player. gets up and down the rink, understands his role in all three zones. I don't know if he has any huge upside like Poirier in terms of speed at this particular time. I just think he has a lot of great areas. Like, he's really good in a lot of good areas. So his ice balance is tremendous for a young kid of his stature right now.
And the interesting thing about Poirier, I believe because of his birthday, this is a guy that's eligible to be with you on a full-time basis next year, which means if he plays well, he might not be far off that Calgary roster. Is that a guy you're looking forward to maybe seeing a bunch of in the next calendar year?
No, it certainly is. Like, he's obviously, I mean, just through one weekend, he's made a pretty good push. And, you know, there's, as you know, traveling and being around this level, there's two different sides to you as an AHL player. Like, number one, can you just fit in on the ice and make the plays that are necessary to help yourself and help the team? And number two, do you fit in socially and mentally at this age? Because sometimes it doesn't seem like a big step from major junior to the AHL, but you and I both know that's a huge step as just a man. And sometimes it takes kids a little bit longer. But so far, so good for Emile. Like, he looks like he has a lot of maturity to him, and he understands how to get through the paces of the game so far, and seems to be fitting in well. So you look forward to him continuing to grow through the game at a rapid pace.
Tell us a bit about Grand Rapids, the team that you draw in the first round. Jeff Blashill is a guy that everyone speaks very highly of, who has crossed paths with him at the head coach position. A lot of the guys we saw star in Grand Rapids in the last couple of years were on the ice in the Joe Louis Arena last night with the Wings, in terms of a guy like Brendan Smith, Tomas Tatar, Joachim Anderson was even up, Gustav Nyquist. What's left in Grand Rapids?
Well, good group. I mean, it's just a good group. I mean, they've got some good veteran defensemen there, and Evans, and they've got Page and some different guys like that. They've got Jordan Tutu up front. You know, they've got some other really skilled players that are there, still there. You know, you got Emerton and certain guys that have been up as well this year. So, and they're defending champs, so they understand how to win. You know, so they're a very dangerous team. Obviously, you might as well get the best of the best right away if you have a choice. It's kind of like maybe the Boston-Detroit series a little bit in a way, or the Chicago-St. Louis series. Like, you'd rather get after a really good team if you can right away and get going. And, you know, we feel good about the matchup. I think we were 1-2-0-1 against them during the year. Although this team that we'll put on the ice Friday would be by far our healthiest and our best team in the four games that we played them this particular year. You know, we're anxious to kind of get going, but we have a lot of respect for them, and I think equally they have the respect for us. But one thing that, Ryan, that just stands out about the organization is that you've got three different eras of, you know, you got the Yzerman, and then they hand it off to Lidstrom, and then it's handed off to kind of Datsyuk, Zetterberg. And the one thing about this organization is their players learn really well from players that are in the organization. And I think that separates the organization in a lot of ways. That's why they're so good, and they understand work ethic, and they get to see this firsthand from the players. It's, you know, kind of what we want in Calgary through Gio and certain players up there. Like, they just learn that way, and when you pass that torch along, it makes your organization really powerful, and I think that's the kind of the caveat that they have going for a lot of their players in Grand Rapids, why they do so well.
Yeah, it seems like you have to own property in Grand Rapids before you're a good Red Wing, but you learn a lot along the way, it seems.
Yes.
Talk to me just real quickly about this format, because for a lot of hockey fans in Calgary, we're always interested in how the Flames prospects are doing, and it'd be lovely to see them go on a big run here in your final year in Abbotsford, but it's a 2-3. It's a best of five. The first two will be in Abbotsford, and then it closes out in Grand Rapids. What does this kind of series feel like as compared to a traditional back-and-forth best of seven?
Well, you just, you know, we did this a couple of years ago, obviously, against Milwaukee. We did the same thing. You know, it is what it is. You kind of get used to it. It's almost like you're numb versus the old, like, you play home and then you go away, or you play 2-2 and then 1, you go back. A lot of it just has to do with budget and travel at this level and different places. There are some divisions, you know, some series that'll start tonight within the American Hockey League because of proximity. There's a different revenue sharing relative to, like, Wilkes-Barre's playing in Binghamton. Well, they really don't go up there the night before because of the travel and how close it is. The league doesn't subsidize that. So every situation's a little bit different. But, you know, the home team has the advantage. Like, they can pick whether they want to play two on the road and then go home for three, or if they want to start at home and then go back and forth. And there's just a lot of logistics involved, and we just kind of battle through that.
Thanks so much for your time, Troy. I really appreciate it. One final question for you. Have you caught all? I know how hard you're going to be working here to prepare for the series, but have you snuck off and watched a little NHL playoff hockey over the past week and a half?
Oh, yeah. It's right on over my shoulder all day and all night here at the office, and just kind of take my peeks at it. Obviously, it's really good hockey right now, and just an entertaining, it's just a, you know, if you're a hockey freak, this is the time of year you want to be involved in life, and got TVs going and computers going and radios going, everything's going here in the office, so it's a great time of year. The only downside is our Flames aren't playing, but things are, you know, up and moving and going in the right direction with Bob and his staff, and I think all the players up there, and hopefully we can continue just to develop and contribute to their success.
Well, we hope you have a long run, and we'll check in with you as your postseason progresses. Thanks for your time, Coach.
All right, you're welcome.
That is head coach of the Abbotsford Heat, Troy G. Ward, as they are set for the Grand Rapids Griffins in the first round games 1 and 2 in Abbey Friday, Saturday. Then they head out to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Michigan, the land of cars? I don't know. Grand Rapids is actually a pretty nice place. They have big crowds, like a 10,000 plus a game. Defending champs. Got to beat the champ to be the champ, they say. So the Heat have a chance to do that in the opening round. Rhett Warner is here. He has brought an item with him into the broadcast booth I have not seen ever brought in before. He is paranoid. He was prepared for a situation he is immensely uncomfortable with. And we'll get exactly into what that is in moments. Also, a reminder, we have an NFL great, one of the top wide receivers ever in the sport, Chris Carter, dragging toes in the end zone, the all-time leader, touchdowns 4 yards or less from the goal line, fourth all-time receiving touchdowns, fourth all-time receptions in NFL history. He's going to be in Calgary coming in May. We'll find out why. And he's also got a kid that is making some waves in the league of three downs here in Canada. So we'll check in with him on the other side. Rhett Warner in studio as well. That is all ahead. Our East-West Hot Stove will key in on a couple series that DeHatchik and Morganti are very close to. DeHatchik has spent a bunch of time in California. We'll get his take on the Sharks going up 3-0 on the Kings with an overtime win last night. Patrick Marleau, a backhander that fluttered in past quick. They have that series by the throat at this point. Well, meanwhile, Al Morganti will tell us if Steve Mason returning into the Philly Nets is going to make a difference against the Rangers with Henrik Lundqvist. That, and of course, Mr. Warner and his mystery prop he has brought in studio today. That all ahead on Boomer in the Morning, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.